rooms. I feel bad for your son. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one.
And it goes a little something like, I like immigrants. Immigrants inspire me, man. They get here, they be so happy. They look up at the buildings like, wow, it's beautiful. And we go, you like it? Good. You gonna clean the bathrooms.
I'm from Texas. I'm from a little town called Racism. Sure you heard of it. Nice little place.
During the election, there was some lady from Ohio, and she was like, I'm afraid if Barack becomes president, his blacks just gonna take over. Like, that's a weird, like, you're gonna be giving a speech. I wanna say to all of the American people that I am your motherfucking president.
But I'm more afraid of the trailer park than the ghetto. I'm not afraid of some black guy with 20-inch rims and gold teeth. I'm afraid of a redneck with a gun rack and no teeth. That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Welcome back to Hick Hop Radio. Listen to that bass. That sounds amazing. What are you messing with that, Adam? I like it. Yeehaw, Shun. Welcome back to Hick Hop Radio. We're here in live on PNCRadio.fm in Dumbo, Brooklyn, where all the hipsters and wannabes reside in this overpriced rent area. But we're happy to be here. And I'm Dustin Chafin, my host, co-host, Kyle Grooms. I think he has an audition. Not sure what it's for. Probably Popeyes or something. And he's running a little bit late, so Adam Lucidi, the intern, is going to step it up a notch, come in a little bit.
There we go.
Pittsburgh, huh?
Absolutely.
Finally got another win.
Just got to keep the momentum going now, hopefully.
It was just so great to beat the Jets and the Ravens. Like, yeah, that feels like the Super Bowl when you have like an awful season. If you beat those two teams,
it just feels good.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. I'm all right with it. I think it's they look good. They finally got a running game, which is huge.
Yep.
Steelers hadn't had a running game in like 2 years. Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking about Bell. Bell's looking good.
Yeah, he looks good. He's got fresh legs, man. I'm excited. They're going to be all right, man. They're going to get maybe 5 wins this year. I can handle that.
I can deal with that.
It was great watching Peyton lose. That was amazing. Yeah. I was so happy that the rookie like got to shine after all that, like, you know, sentimental shit like in the beginning when they're like everybody's holding the signs and you know that was too much, man. And he's crying, you know, the crowd's crying and this poor new guy's just sitting there like, fuck.
Yeah.
I gotta follow this.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Like, he just killed. He's like, oh damn, I gotta follow this now.
That was great though. That was great that they won. Because you know what? It's like Peyton's had his rings and all that, so I think it's just great,
yeah,
to see somebody like take down that guy like that. That was awesome. And I don't know, that's just, that guy's got to feel good right now, just knowing that he's, you know, because now it's like he's kind of out of the shadow. Like, this game was so important, he had to beat him to get out of that shadow, and then now he's like, you know,
now he's gonna have the support behind him and everything.
Yeah, it's good, man. Football. Well, I'll go ahead and bring in our guests since I'm kind of bringing this to a low. I usually have Kyle and I get our racist thing going on in the beginning, so.
Yeah, we don't really fight too much.
We're both Steeler fans. We've been on the road a lot, so there's not a lot of pressure there. So our two guests today, really excited to have these two guys here. First guest, very funny guy. It's funny how in comedy, I never thought I would meet another Dustin. Well, I mean, Dustin Diamond is the other freak, but we don't count him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't count that.
We don't count Dustin
He's
Diamond.
He's not in the club.
No. Yeah. But we have Dustin Yabarez here. He's not only, his name's Dustin, he's from my hometown, Bedford, Texas. We both went to the same high school. I went a little earlier, as you can tell. But it was so funny.
Yeah, same exact
high school, same town, same fucking name. That's hilarious. Yeah. And same career choice, stand-up comedy. Yeah. So we are blood brothers. Dustin Yabar in the house, seen him with several sitcoms and comedy shows and all that funny stuff. Good to have you here, buddy.
Yeah, man, it's good to be here. You know what's funny about the sitcom thing? Like, just last Friday, I found out it's like not happening.
I promoted it today.
After like, six episodes, no, it'll be able to like come out and everything.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, they pulled the plug after like 6 episodes. So that kind of sucks.
Well,
I know I was ready to call my girlfriend and be like, "Fuck you, bitch!" Turn on.
Are they gonna air 6 episodes or?
Yeah, they're gonna air it like in mid-season, so that'll be cool. And I guess if something miraculous happens, you know, and like it's a hit, then I guess it could get get picked up for more. But right now, they said it's dead in the water. So that.
Yeah. Well, you know what Dave Smith would do for 6 episodes on Fox?
I'd kill my father with my mother's dead body for one bit part on your dead series. If they needed to refilm one thing, and they'd stick me in there.
Oh, man. Very funny. Dave Smith, Montreal Comedy Festival. Yeah.
I was. Killed it up there. I was talk of the festival.
Oh, were you?
Chappelle.
I took your seat. I thought you were going to be really late. You got the late seat. I had no idea. You were going to be here this early. That's right. You got to crack a seat.
Yeah, what's up? You came in like wacky neighbor right. just now. That was awesome.
It's Kyle Grooms, everybody.
You got the crack a seat. Sorry, man.
Kramer entrance.
Hey, everybody.
That was Kramered out, yeah.
Introduce
hey, Jerry, I got it.
We just introduced our guests, Dustin Yambar and Dave Smith. Kyle Grooms in the building.
What's up, y'all?
Yay, Kyle Grooms.
You guys remember when Michael Richards was just known for his goofy entrances and not his hate speech?
I know, it's back on TV now.
Is he really?
Yeah, there's a new show with Michael Richards. Is in the cast.
Oh, what? I'm not even racist, and he got it 6 episodes more, man.
Well, what's the statute of limitations on racism? I think it's 5 years.
Is it 5 years?
Yeah, it's about time.
Look at Don Imus. That lasted 6 months, and that guy got back on.
Yeah, right.
So it depends, you know.
I think it depends on how racist we thought you were going in. Yeah. Like, with Don Imus, we kind of, we were like, all right.
Yeah, we saw that coming. He never hid that shit.
Paula Deen's going to have a quick turnaround. Yeah. She's going to have a quick turnaround. They're already, like, pumping her up right now.
Yeah, oh,
like a special coming out, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
People be eating her chicken pretty soon.
Did you hear about that thing, the Red Lobster waitress? Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah.
She apparently was a waitress at Red Lobster, black girl, and she got it like the receipt back from the customer, and it said the N-word on it, and then it said nothing in the tip column. And it became this big news thing, and she got 10 grand. Somebody did it like a Kickstarter sympathy thing, and she got a check for 10 grand.
Damn. I should fake a race attack.
Wait, hold on. Who got 10 grand? Not the...
The girl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Adam was saying it was fake. Like, they were saying like they didn't match the handwriting of the customer.
I read it was fake, yeah.
Well, how much did she refill? Because if it wasn't that much, it's like, come on. You know, you got
to I've been to Red Lobster.
Yeah,
she didn't bring those biscuits fast enough.
Yeah. Funny, where it said tips, that's where they wrote nigga, where it said tips.
Yeah.
Like, to what? N-word or whatever.
That's not even a tip. Like, a tip would be, like, do a better job, N-word. Like, that would be a tip.
They didn't even get it right. You think she got 10 grand, though? I don't know. I think she's...
Yeah, man, for pain and suffering. Yeah. I wish somebody gave me 10 grand when somebody called me.
She's just working at Red Lobster, so I guess that is bad enough.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Racism.
If Zimmerman could get money... For him, you know, why not her?
He didn't get money.
Yeah, people were donating to Zimmerman's trial, and they raised a lot of money.
You can get money for... There's really, like, people break into people's homes and, like, break their legs and get money from the state all the time. Crazy shit. You can get money for a lot of ridiculous things, man.
That's I'm just sick of the Kickstarter stuff, man.
Kickstarter.
It's ridiculous. I saw something, like, just some comic was like, yeah, I'm having a hard time with my bills and trying to follow my dreams. Like, really?
Oh, that's bullshit.
It's like a Kickstarter. I'm going to pay your rent because you're not funny. Like, that's, I don't know.
No way. I would understand if you had, like, a wife and kids and I just got laid off from my real job or something, you know?
But even that, man, they never had that, like, in the Depression. Like, what is
I want to kickstart my child support payments.
Yeah.
It's like,
ridiculous.
Who are your Facebook friends? Billionaires? Are you just asking me, another broke comic, for money? Like, that's like taxing the poor to feed the poor. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's socialism.
Not even the right kind. Like,
no, I mean, I understand. Like, I think Public Enemy, like, they kind of started that thing where they wanted people to produce their album. That's kind of cool, you know, kind of the people's music kind of thing. But then people just started just doing ridiculous things. Just to get, I don't know.
Yeah, kickstarting a movie that we never see the movie.
Well, even Spike Lee did that, which really, Spike, you need a Kickstarter?
Yeah, Zach Braff did that too.
Did he really?
Yeah. All these celebrities are doing it, man, but just trying to get the fans to pay. Veronica Mars, they did it right, I think, you know, because a lot of fans, they want to keep seeing that show, you know? And, you know, if I was a fan of the show, I'd be like, all right, here's some money, let me see it, you know?
I guess.
The studio's not going to put any
money too,
behind
BET,
it.
The Game too, on BET, The Game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Kickstarter, but they did have petition for people to keep the show alive. We should do that for hip hop.
We got to get a breath first. No, I mean, I understand that. That's just like with the Betty, you know, what was it, the old chick, Betty White? Like, everybody petitioned to get her on. That's, petition's different than giving money.
Giving money, yeah.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know. I think that's, if you're not, you know, that's part of the showbiz game. Like, getting somebody to produce and invest and, I don't know. I don't know, yeah, if it should come from the people. Maybe it should. I don't know. Maybe things are changing. I don't know. It's where the music industry has changed so much that people don't buy records and stuff or CDs. How old am I? Records?
No, records,
buy
those. I got this nice phonograph.
8 tracks. Nobody buys 8 tracks anymore.
Did you used to listen to 8 tracks when you were a kid?
Absolutely. So did you. Don't act like you didn't.
I didn't. I wasn't acting like I didn't, you son of a bitch.
You're older than me.
That's why I first heard Richard Pryor was on 8-Track. I still, yeah.
Wow.
I listened to Richard Pryor on 8-Track. Richard Pryor and Otis Redding. Those were the two things.
Well, 8-Tracks was the worst because you would just, like, in the middle of the song, it would go to a track. You go to a track, like track 4, and it'd just be the middle of the song. You have to wait for the whole thing to loop around before you could actually listen to one song from the beginning.
Damn, I don't even remember it like that.
Yeah.
The first one I saw, I thought it was a Nintendo game because they look kind of like the cartridges.
Yeah, it's like a big version.
Yeah, and I'm like, Earth, Wind, and Fire, this sounds like the shit, you know? I want to play this game.
So. Oh, wow.
But nah.
That's crazy the way he says the first one I ever saw. Like, it's
dude, it was.
I was at the Smithsonian.
Dude,
I was at the Smithsonian Museum, and I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I would see shit like that as a kid. I remember. And do you guys, there was this other, like, computer game kind of thing that, like, hooked up to the TV. It wasn't the Atari, but it was like something else.
I remember, I know what you're talking about.
The television.
Yeah, it had two little beep.
Oh, Pong.
Was it Pong?
No,
Pong.
It had other games too, but Pong was like its bread and butter, I guess.
Oh, really?
But like it had other games. But I remember I would see cartridges for that, and it's like it's finding stuff from like artifacts from different times.
I had ColecoVision. That was the shit.
And television. I had ColecoVision too.
That was the shit, man.
Pac-Man.
Smurf.
Oof. No, Smurf. Yeah, Smurf Adventure.
Yeah, that was
You guys remember PlayStation 1?
Yeah.
You guys remember how crazy that was?
That was huge, though.
Final Fantasy.
When that came out, that was huge.
I was so psyched when I got a PlayStation. Oh, but I think Nintendo was the first system like I ever.
That was your first system?
I like PlayStation 1 the best. I really do. Road Rage. I used to play that motorcycle game. Like chains and stuff on it. I don't know.
Pitfall was my shit.
Pitfall.
That was Atari. But yeah. Still.
I remember I had a stepdad that was like this hardcore religious guy, and he wouldn't let me play video games a lot, so I missed out like on a whole five years of gaming. Yeah. Oh, I made up for it, as you can.
What kind of religion?
You never hit him with, "You're not my real dad."
Yeah, all the fucking time. No, that's like your go-to when you got a step.
Dad will let me watch it.
And then you know your real dad's not going to come around, so you got to put up with this motherfucker. Like, "You're not my real dad." Then he could always bust out, "Really, where's your real dad? Shut up."
How old were you when your mom got remarried?
I was like, how old was I then? I was probably like 10.
Okay.
But
10 and your mom brought a religious guy home? That's
the worst.
I'm so thankful my stepdad was just a drunk. No. Just a nice, leave me alone drunk.
How were you when you got the stepdad?
Pretty, like 6 when they started dating.
Okay.
At 6.
Oh,
so like, they got married when I was like 9 or 10, but they were like together from when I was pretty young.
Yeah, I got mine at 19, and that was weird because you're already a man.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to. Just, you're not
you're
fucking, my
you're fucking my
mom.
Fucking my mother.
I'm gonna fist fight you.
Yeah.
Fucking my mom. I'm fucking captain of the football team. You kidding me? I'm fucking my mom.
That was weird. He was real jealous of me and my mom being close.
Really?
It was, it's been rough. Mm. Yeah, it was a rough couple of years.
I've had a few stepdads. I had that guy was super religious. Then the dude after him was like, he was just a really old guy, and he actually died. You know, like shortly after they got married.
Wait, a few was three. You had 3 stepfathers?
No, I had.
It's Texas, man.
My mom got married. Yeah, my mom got married 4 times. I came in halfway into the journey. You know.
Wow. Right,
so my mom's been married 4 times. That's
okay,
Texas,
yeah, that's
man.
A Texas yeah. thing. Yeah. Wow,
really? My grandma was like 8 or 9 or something.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to be having sex before marriage. You know, you gotta.
Oh, is that
get,
it?
Yeah.
Say, you know what? If you're gonna marry me, we're gonna have sex. You have to marry me. And that's
what
they do. It's not very casual.
So. This is Texas. These are the same. These are all the conservatives who talk about the tradition of marriage.
Yeah.
This is the tradition of my 4 marriages. It's not going to be ruined.
Gay people can't get married, but we can get married 12 times.
I know.
That's what God wants.
And 4 times, that's not even that crazy in Texas. Yeah.
I swear to you, my mother was like, and my grandmother was like 8 or 9 times. Like, we don't even know how high it was.
That is insane, man. Oh my God. Yeah,
because that's what people did. They didn't date. They got married.
On her
no,
another,
no.
Another
nobody
wedding.
Courted. What's up?
She spent her honeymoon having another wedding.
Pretty much. She got married, like, the last time she got married, she was 80. Like, she just kept getting married, yeah.
Wow. Dang, that's crazy.
She must have got that wet.
Come on. I'm talking about my grandmama. Talking about my grandmama. We don't do grandmama jokes. We don't do grandmama jokes. Mama jokes are all right. We don't talk about grandmama. No grandmama.
I don't want you to talk about my grandmama.
No, we don't go grandmama. Yeah, you fight me. Wouldn't you fight me? I fight you. Grandma.
For my grandmother, she's passed.
Mine, too. That's why I don't, you know, a little respect.
Really?
She's crazy, though. She's out of her mind. She's afraid of snakes. That was a big
Oh, my grandmother was, too.
I'd get those, you know, those little plastic worms that you fish with. Mm-hmm. I'd just throw them up on the top of the, you know, ceiling, and then we'd drop down on her while she's reading her paper. Hilarious. And she'd scream and run out the door.
So you didn't respect your grandmother.
I
you
did. I was just a little kid. I was just a little kid, man. It was my crazy stage.
Making her have a heart attack. And now
I can't say something.
Yeah, you're right. You can. I can. Oh, okay. That's how it is. You know, it's family. Can't talk about my family.
Oh, all right. Yeah, they're not going to hear it.
So here's the deal. You miss us. So Dustin and I, same name, same town.
What?
Same freaking town. Went to the same high school.
Really?
Yeah.
And his name's Dustin.
Yeah.
Damn.
How and he's a comic. That is kind of shit.
Shit.
It's the craziest
was, thing. The town less racist when you came up in it? Because Dustin claims.
Well, he's younger. I stayed inside a lot. Yeah. Once you get out of the city, I feel like it gets a little bit nuts. Out of the suburbs, you know? It's a little bit crazy.
Did they have more black people in high school when you went through it?
We have black people.
You had more, yeah. Well, he's a lot younger than me, too.
Yeah, it had to be better than Jim Crow days when Dustin was in high school. It had to be a little bit better.
Segregation today, tomorrow, and forever.
Yeah, I got a little improved.
Oh, it got a little better?
Yeah. Got some immigration in there.
Mm. So is the quality of school better or worse than it was?
It was a good school. Like they were like one of the
good football team.
Good football, yeah, that's what it was. They had all the money because they had a badass football team.
Yeah,
which were Tongans. Too.
Tongans, absolutely. I knew a lot of those Tongans. Guys.
What is a Tongan?
It's like a Samoan kind of like a Tongan island, right? Isn't that a real thing? Tongan island.
Yeah, there was a huge community in Ulis where the school was, and they're like, that was a Jeopardy question, man. Did you see that?
No,
that was a big exciting day for the town. You know, it was like. Where are the most Tongans in America located? It was like Euless, Texas, you know.
Oh, I thought that was the mascot of your team, the Tongans. I was going to say, that's like some...
Trojans. We were the Trojans.
Oh, the Trojans. Yeah.
Trinity Trojans.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious. And a lot of those guys are Mormons, like a lot of the Tongans.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's because I was Mormon in high school at the last end of it, and there was all these, like, Tongan guys that were Mormons. Because the Mormon missionaries go over to these little islands.
You just converted to Mormonism for a minute?
I did.
And then back... Wow.
I did.
You said that so normally. Like that.
Well,
like
I've talked about it a lot.
Do, like a chick being a lesbian in college. So, you know, I did a little Mormonism.
I've talked about it a lot on the show, so that's why.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They look like Samoans or something?
Yeah. They're
any hot tongue
like
and
Palamau looking guys.
What's the chicks look like?
All right. I don't know. Kind of big.
There was
big,
like one
big
hot
girls.
One. Oh, yeah.
Big, yeah.
But the Tongans are good, man. They're front line, man. All Tongans. That's what you need.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah, Tongans.
They know how to work the minorities, you know, Texas, you know.
Yeah, I've heard of Tongans, but
it's Hawaii, I think, right? No? Near Hawaii?
One of the Pacific Islands.
Some one of those places.
Yeah, somewhere that's not here, I don't know.
Yeah, someplace where they breed them big.
Yeah.
And they're good for football.
You have a lot in Seattle, and in, Anchorage has a lot of, like, Samoans. I don't know if they're Samoans, but they're Pacific Islanders.
Yeah, I was in Anchorage couple years ago, and there, a lot of a lot of natives, a lot of
coots play coots.
Yeah, those motherfuckers drink like crazy, dude. There is nothing like the way natives in the cold of Alaska drink. Yeah. It's like insane.
Nuts.
You can't keep up with them.
Yeah, I was on that in that club, and they kept bringing me shots, man. And I had like five shots while I was on stage, and I was a mess.
Right at the end of it, you're like, dude.
And then some Eskimo guy like lights me up and like the strongest weed I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Like I just couldn't even talk. You know that weed where you just can't talk to people?
That's like you.
Oh, yeah. That all time
you're just so high you can't talk. Yeah. You're just like, I was so paranoid. Yeah.
As soon as I talk, this guy's going to call the cops on me.
Yeah. And it was just like the people come up to me, hey, good show.
And you're like, I just couldn't talk to anybody. You feel like an idiot because you can't
I could
even
not hang out with anybody. Yeah. Just went into my.
Just go back to my room and go to sit in the corner.
That place is hilarious. Have you ever played Charlie? Was it Charlie Coots?
Chill Coots Charlie's. Yeah.
I went up there though with a back when I opened for Mencia like 3 weeks in a row, and one of them was up there. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like he's like killing with all your stuff right now. Somehow.
It was right after that shit went down, too. And, like, really? So he was being, I heard he was digging. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be nervous, you know.
He was in the back with a notepad while you're performing.
He's wearing a wire.
Mencia is a nice guy. He's always been nice to me. Man.
Super. I actually talked about this recently on another podcast. I met Mencia once, and he was a super, super nice guy to me. I'm just joking. Nice. I don't know if he's ever stolen a thing. I don't know anything about him. But he very nice.
But it's so funny how people, or everyone
says it's just. That, and then I felt like a dick because I was like, you know what, he was a really nice guy to me.
Oh, no, I'm not, dude, you know, but I'm just saying, it's like people always
somebody
say
smartening up in showbiz. Yeah.
And if he still needs a feature, I'd be happy to listen.
We'll all open for him.
He let me use his truck to move, man. That was awesome.
That's cool. How were the shows, like theaters and stuff?
Yeah, they were fun. One of them was weird. One of them, I remember the first night was weird. I didn't do well, but the second night was really fun. We went to Anchorage, and where was the other place that shit. Where's the only other place in Alaska?
Juneau?
No. Damn it. There's another one. I can't remember where it
Juneau,
was.
Juneau, Anchorage. That's all I know.
Yeah, Juneau and Anchorage. Where else would you...
A lot of military there.
Oh, yeah.
Military base. Yeah. He crushes, though. Like,
it's crazy destruction. Yeah, like, it's, like nuts. Like,
people don't even realize what he can do. I mean, he's...
Who's that, Mencia?
Yeah.
Did you hear any... Like, people say he's still, but I've never heard anything... And I'm good at catching people stealing, but I've never heard anything that I'm like, he stole
it. The only time that it bothered me, like the whole, you know, Rogan thing, I didn't even give a shit about that. The only thing that bothered me was when he did he turned like a Kinison joke into a sketch on his show and didn't give him credit.
Oh, that sucks.
That was the only time it kind of got weird with me. It was just like, Kinison did a bit about The Last Supper and all the thing, and he did a whole sketch on it, and it was obviously, you know, stolen from that, but that's the only thing, but... I guess, I don't know, it's a sketch, it's not a stand-up, maybe he just thought about it like that, you know. Yeah. Sometimes I think it's, I don't know, people, I mean, even like Chris Rock, certain people have been known, you know, it's people, they have writers, like I've heard of being on, you know, being in a club and there's writers that are in the back that are writers for Chris Rock and they're watching the show and taking notes. And so I don't know if they're stealing for Chris Rock or just giving premises, but, you know, I mean, I think when you get really famous, you just want to keep pumping out material that sometimes you don't even, like, care about where it comes from.
Yeah.
I think that happens sometimes.
You know what's weird? Before that, I didn't pay attention to, like, joke thievery. It wasn't a thing, you know, like, really in my mind. Like, it didn't really happen too much. But then after that, I started getting all self-conscious. Like, if I would have a notebook in the club and I was in the back, I'm like, oh, man, I hope no one thinks that I'm, like, writing their shit down or something.
Well, I see it happen all the time when there's, like, a group of comics that work together a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all in the same shows. We're all the... I'll see it slip out. And I know the comic didn't mean to. It's just all together.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
It just happens so much. You'll say, like, a throwaway line or something or somebody uses for crowd work. Yeah. And you'll see it happen all the time. And you know they weren't like, I'm going to steal that from them. They just can't help it.
I've caught myself doing that before, whereas I think every comic's done that before. Where you literally, it's not even like stealing a thing. It's like you'll just, it could be a completely different joke. It's just the way you present two words next to each other. You go, oh yeah, someone else like kind of presents these words like that. Like it's shit seeps into your subconscious, and that's like impossible to.
I was doing this bit for like 3 weeks. I was like, I live with a midget and a Jew. We're called the Unfuckables. And then I was like, that's so Attell. Like but I didn't even think about it because I lived with a midget. So I was like, and we are kind of Unfuckables. And then so it just kind of started happening. I didn't know where I'd heard it.
Did he have a punchline like that? The Unfuckables?
Kind of, yeah. It was like a total Attell joke. But I had heard it, and then just, you know, we were making fun of each other, and it just kind of came out like, we're the Unfuckables, and nobody called me out on it, and then I did it on stage, and then I caught myself after a couple of times.
Yeah, I saw a bit the other day. Someone posted online about moose in Alaska, and I do a whole bit about me going to pet a moose and the moose like looking at me. And I saw somebody do a whole bit on seeing moose in Alaska. Now I can't do my shit no more, man.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Really? Like, yeah. It was that level where it's like, I can't do it.
Yeah, and plus he went so, he told the whole story and he, you know, I mean, mine is like one quick bit, you know, I saw a moose, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was on a radio show, blah, blah, but then he did one and it's, you know, it's a good bit. So I think I'll leave it alone.
Well, it's so weird when you have like a real story that happened to you. Like I've been skydiving, but I feel like there's 9 guys on stage that talk about skydiving. So it's like no matter how I like present my version of it, it's going to sound like another guy's skydiving bit.
Dude,
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's also things like that that are just probably, there are some things that are like kind of just out there, and it's likely that people are going to touch on them.
Oh,
and that's,
yeah.
I remember like when I was like a year in comedy, you know, when you really need every bit that you have. And this was like one of the first bits I ever wrote that was really doing well on stage that I felt, and it was about just like the idea of like American football versus football, which I'm sure a million comics have touched on that idea that there's two sports with the same name that are different. You know what I mean? So anyway, I had like a little bit on that. And I remember I was falling asleep watching TV and some Vic Henley special was on. And Vic just, and Vic Henley's like a fucking pro. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like a brand new comic. And he took on that topic and just did it so much better than me. Like hit everything I hit, but then hit a whole bunch of like other really interesting shit that I didn't even touch. I remember he does this thing where he's like, he was like, we think we have rivalries in like American sports where they'll be like, it's like Boston versus New York. He goes, I saw a football game in Europe the other day. It was England, Germany. He was like, try to touch that rivalry.
Yeah.
But it was like such a smart bit the way he did it. And you just sit there as a one-year comic losing your strongest bit you've ever wrote. Like,
that's
the most painful, feeling. Like,
Do you still sit down and write? It's like, do you write or do you take time during the day or just bullshit?
Not really.
Like
every time I try to do that, I just never produce well like that. It just kind of comes when it comes for me.
Conversations usually. Yeah. Good bits come out. I remember one time, 6 months in, I got a gig because I took some comedy class or something. So somebody in the class was like, this guy's funny.
Chili Chalice?
Yeah, and it was like, it was a New Year's Eve gig, and it was, I was so stressed. I had to do like 30 minutes, and I had nothing. I had maybe 5 minutes. If you say you have 5 minutes, you have 2 minutes. If you say you have 30, you have 15. You know what I mean? Like when you just start out, and this comic, Brad Trackman, actually, and he let me borrow some of his material for the gig.
Here, take this.
I was so nervous about doing time. He's like, it's okay, dude. You could just borrow this joke and borrow this. I borrowed like 3 jokes. It was horrible. It was so funny, though. Bombed my ass off. My mom was there. Drove up, flew in from Texas for up in the Poconos. It was all Polish people. It was
she
awful.
Brought her 12th.
I couldn't even make that funny. That's when you're 6 months in. You can't even make a room full of Polish people. That the idea of that funny.
Freaking
One of my first feature gigs on the road, I didn't have the time. I had like 25, and I was right there at 30. And the first show, I went under, and it was a comic strip, Bart Reed's place. And he was like,
"Oh yeah, yeah, El Paso."
Like, yeah, El Paso. He was like, "You gotta stay up there, man. If you do that again, you know, I don't know what's gonna happen the rest of the week." I'm like, "Okay." So I call my buddy, and I'm like, "Hey, dude, I'm gonna do your closer, okay?" I was like, "I know it. It's the only one I know that well." He's like, "Okay, man, that's cool." I'm like, "All right." So I went up there and check it out. This closer, my buddy's a mechanic. All right, he's like this Mexican mechanic, dude. And I'm like this fucking chubby 19-year-old nerd. I go up. I remember I say, "Hey, guys, I like to work on cars." And as soon as I said that, I'm like, "Oh, you are so fucked right now." So it's like, I like to work on cars. And one time I sent my buddy to the store to go get me some parts. And I said, "Hey, get me this, get me that." And it's like blinker fluid is the whole thing. And pick me up some blinker fluid. So my cousin's like, "All right." And then he calls me up and gets there. And he's like, well, everyone at AutoZone is laughing at me. They say I gotta go to O'Reilly's. And that was like the punch of it. And I got done with it. And I was just like, "I'm so sorry, you guys. I gotta go now. I'm gonna close on that." I remember
And that was the big finish.
Oh, man. That was the biggest finish. Yeah, but I made it. I did 30. I don't care. I stayed.
You didn't think to maybe not close on the thing you took?
No, because in my mind, I thought I was like, you know what? I'm only going to do it if I have to. And then it's like, oh, shit, you got to do this, man. Oh. And I butchered it so goddamn bad, dude.
That was funny.
At least you did something.
Yeah, I was like, you got to do something. Show must go on, right?
I had a gig last weekend. I was, you know, just when you do so many city gigs, you're just used to doing like a certain amount of time, usually that 15 or that 20 or whatever. And I have a really bad concept of time. Like, I have no idea the difference between, like, 15 and 45. Like, I just don't.
Once you're on stage, you don't.
I really get caught up, and I just whatever. And I was on stage, and I was kind of feeling tired and grumpy. And I just really just wanted to do what I wanted to do on stage. But I forgot when you're headlining, you know, they expect a certain amount of time. So I just did my thing, did my closer, got off stage, and then the guys were like, "Dude, you just did 25 minutes.
What?"
And I was like, "Oh, man, I thought because I saw a cell phone. I pulled that line. I saw somebody on a cell phone." So, and the MC's off stage, and there's nobody on stage. The crowd is just sit put. Like, they're not moving. It's not like they're like, "Hey, the show's over." So they go, you gotta go back up. I go, I'll go back up. So the MC goes back on stage, brings me back, and I do like another 25. Like, and that's difficult because you're Rolodexing, and you're just like, oh, okay, I can't use that one. And, you know, just lots of crowd work. But I got through it. I did two different 25-minute sets, which was, you know, when you've lost that momentum of all your good shit.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah, but I pulled it off. I pulled it off, and they, you know, they fucking loved it, I guess. But it was tough, man, just trying to get back up there and just restart with all your new stuff I wrote on the way there, you know? Just fucking thinking, hey, what do you think about this government shutdown? Oh, and have no punchline.
Well, there's a very weird thing to, like, I'm trying to, like, articulate this the way I want to say it, because I think you'll all get, there's something weird to, like, it's like, oh, I could, like, do an hour. If I know I need to go do an hour, that's okay. I'll kind of put an hour in my head and know that I need to do that. Yeah. But if you tell me to do 20 minutes and then after I burn that 20 minutes, you go, by the way, I need you to do another 40 right now, that's really tough. Because it's like, you don't know, man. Like, things kind of have to fit together, and you don't know what you've used and what you haven't. You did the quicker version of things when you could have done the longer version of things. Like, there's so many things that it's hard to once you. And then, you know, you're always in that moment where when you're just on the spot and you can't think of a joke.
Oh my God.
It's like, it's like the same three jokes for your entire career are the only three jokes you can think of in that spot. And then you're like, I know I have like another hour. I've been on stage for 10 minutes. How can I only think of one other joke that I have? There's weird things like that.
Yeah, you forget your whole joke from 2008 or something.
You kind of got to know what you're doing going in. When it's like,
absolutely.
It's like weird.
Yeah, it was tough, man. I hacked one line. I said, talking about eating pussy or something. There's a black dude. So, black guys don't eat pussy. You're maybe with hot sauce. And that was like the only line. I knew that was like a Voss line or something, but everything else was mine. But that was the one time I was, and of course that destroyed.
That's more of like a nature fact.
Oh, God.
Don't feel bad. I did a show last week and a comic did a Lorena Bobbitt joke.
Oh, wow.
Oh, damn.
About it. And she threw the dick on the highway. And the guy cut his dick off and threw it. I was like,
see, I blame the crowd in that situation. What were they doing?
Looking at him like he was crazy. Okay. The crowd wasn't going for that bullshit.
All right, good.
And the crowd was rough for me because it was the Cayman Islands. So you got people from all over the world with different sensibilities. You know, if you do race stuff, they're like, oh, we don't have that problem. You know what I mean? If you do this, that. So it was kind of hard navigating through my set. Like, I would be killing, and then the door would slam. You know what I mean?
That's the worst.
And the laughs never last long. It's like, next.
Shut down.
It's
next.
Like every joke was, you know.
That's the worst when they just shut up quick, and you just, because you, like, you, it just fucks up your whole rhythm.
Yeah.
Like, you can't flow. I hate it when a crowd won't let you flow. They just want to just arms folded.
And people were self-conscious. He told me that. People there don't want other people to see them laughing at certain things. Like if you laugh at a drug joke, then people are going to think, you know.
Yeah.
I never understood that shit.
Like at like office parties and stuff.
Yeah,
like
whenever
like an office books a club, it's weird like that. It feels like.
Yeah.
The boss is there.
Yeah. Audiences, you know, I've said this before. They need to be prepped. Almost before they go in, I almost want to hand out little pamphlets on how to be a good comedy audience member.
Yeah, don't be a bitch ass.
Unfold your arms. Mm-hmm. You know, when you order a drink, don't order Long Island iced tea. Like, you know, like, it's not personal. If you happen to be black or somebody does a black joke, like, they just get too sensitive, and you know, people just, they don't know how to relax and enjoy. So I was a great audience member before I ever did comedy. I was laughing and clapping and cheering, and I was great. I'd stand up and clap, and, you know, I was always into it.
Hoot and holler?
I did hoot and holler, man.
What comedy clubs you go to before you were doing comedy?
Well, Texas Funny Bone before it was Hyenas.
In what city?
In Arlington, Texas. That's my first comedy club. And over by Six Flags. Oh, you know where you played there, right?
It's that was my first comedy club, too. That's funny. Okay.
Yeah,
I think you guys should date.
I think
something's going on.
But that was the
both
first
have
time.
Girlfriends
first,
named Leah.
Yeah, we do. First New York City was Boston Comedy Club because I went to college over there, so I just would go to that comedy club, Boston. I saw Tony Woods, Chappelle, and Jay Moore all on one show. Andrew Brewer was hosting that show. It was crazy. I remember Tony Woods had like a meltdown on stage, and I'd seen him like the night before. That's how good a comedy fan I was. I went right back the next night, and I brought my friends, and he was on stage, and he's either brilliant or don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, that's Tony, and he was on stage, and he was just having one of those things, and he wasn't telling jokes. He was just kind of staring at the crowd and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I yelled out one of the bits from last night, and he got all pissed off. I was like, oh, really? Hey, do that Subway bit. He goes, what the fuck, we married? You want the same thing over and over? He was just yelling.
Oh, wow.
That was my first interaction with a comic.
Yeah.
I was trying to help you, man. You know that.
Yeah. I'm trying to help you, man.
I was that guy. Okay. Trying to help you. Yeah, you know. Like, you need some help up there. But, yeah, I don't know. The whole dynamic, when it actually works, it's almost like a weird thing. Like, sometimes when it, I almost expect it not to work a lot of times, just because the idea of it where it's just like these strangers in front of you, you're forcing them to drink, and then you're forcing them to laugh through your perspective and point of view.
It's strange.
It's a weird fucking thing. I completely
agree with you. It's strange that it works. It's strange that it works so much.
And that people still come out and fill clubs to just sit there and have someone make them laugh.
You would just think, I mean, it's like, I'm not, like, everyone's got, you know, there are lots of guys that have, like, funny jokes and stuff like that, but yeah, you would think it's like, oh, I'm going to put a room of people in front of me and be like, hey, coming in with the idea of, like, we're trying to make you laugh. Like, it's so, given away at first. Like, this is supposed to be funny. Tell me if you think this is funny. I'm going to get up and just say words, and it'll work. Like, you think, like, a lot of times that's not going to work, right? Like, people just won't laugh at all. It's like, that's pretty rare, actually. Yeah. It's pretty rare that you'll see someone do a set where just no one, I mean, it ranges from, like, good to bad, but...
No, it
pretty
works.
Rare. It just doesn't work.
But it always amazes me too when it does. Yeah. I'm just like,
let me ask anybody. Do y'all think that comedy styles are changing now? Like what people are into? Like, is it storytelling now, or is it
all story?
Joke, or you know what? It seems to me storytelling.
I remember Todd Lynn, the late Todd Lynn, saying to me, one of the I always thought it was a really interesting thing was he was talking about. One of the last conversations I had with him, he talked a lot about how much comedy's changed and how much like the reality TV era, and not just reality TV, but the kind of reality era. The like people want things real now.
Yeah.
There's no like shtick anymore, like presentation to it. It's the same reason why like sitcoms aren't really big anymore. And even when there are sitcoms, they have to be presented a lot more like real life.
It can't be
like the way. There's something about that, and I thought he was kind of an because he kind of you know, as a guy who started when comedy was still kind of a different thing. It was, you know, kind of saw a development deal time or this time. And it was just an interesting... And I do... I mean, yeah, I think there's something so much like the whole 80s throw a blazer on and do a shtick thing is
like, hey,
long gone. Yeah, that's gone, man. I mean...
And now it's really alty and stuff now. If you do,
but there's, and there's other things about it. Like when you think about, I mean, like I feel like in my childhood, I went through a lot of that kind of time. Like when I was a little kid, it was like Michael Jackson's "Beat It" was like a depiction of gang violence in a music video. And if you look at what was really going on in like the streets and like the 80s and shit like that, there were real knife fights. We weren't tying arms and dancing. Like they were really. And then eventually it was just like people just went to like, no, let's actually show what it's.
That's real.
Like a much more real depiction.
So you feel that comics have to be more conversational.
Yeah.
Or less like something like some guys that do a lot of impressions now. I see. Audience is kind of they're with it, but then they're kind of like, nah, motherfucker.
Well, it just depends, you know. I mean, I personally, as a fan, I like a good joke teller. I'm a big Rodney Dangerfield guy. I'm a big Stephen Wright guy.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Martin, goofy shit. Like, I feel like it's so funny. It seems like the more famous the comics get now, their new specials. All storytelling, you know. I feel like that's it becomes kind of, and to me, it's interesting. But I still like a good joke. Like I appreciate a good joke. I don't know. Like I wonder how somebody like Stephen Wright would do with a room full of kids, like 1920.
Yeah,
I wonder.
Yeah.
I really wonder because he's such a great joke. But I wonder if like that would hit. You know, I mean, Mitch Hedberg was kind of the last of that guy, the last of that kind
just
of comedy.
Just sitting and listening to your jokes, like, you know.
And he was able to do
no
it.
One's, I mean, I think, like, today, man, it's like, no one's, even if you are just, like, a joke teller, it's like this. Like, what you're doing right now, this is what they want.
Yeah.
They want to actually hear, like, a conversation with you, what you really think, who you as
depends
a dude are. They want to come see your act after that, too, but then they want to see your tweeting every day. They want to see it. Like, it's like, they really want you as a person now. It can't just be this, like, character jokey
thing. I'm not saying it can't, but like it's well, that seems to be what's more the formula.
I guess. I mean, I see a lot of guys bomb when they get into the story mode. You know, yeah, I see night after night, I see guys that tell the long stories and shit, and the audience is like on a like a comedy club type atmosphere. Yeah. Theater's a whole nother thing, but like as far as the two drink comedy club, in and out, Friday show, 8, 10 p.m., you know, 12 o'clock, I feel like you kind of have to hit them harder. But
yeah, with a story in a club, your beats really have to be coming da-da. Bang, bah, bah, bah. You know, you have to something
kill,
to pepper that story.
Well, what I think the reason Jay Oakerson gets away with so much is what he's able to tell a story, but he adds like comical tags along the way.
Sure, yeah.
And that's the key to that's why he does so well with that, because it's like.
And I think Jay like developed into that. I think a lot of guys like try to, you know, like jump right into that. Yeah. Where it's like, I think Jay was a joke teller for years.
Louis C.K.
A lot of that. So, yeah, you know? Like
he was such a weird joke guy. That's what he did.
Right.
The strange jokes, just
and
weird.
It's kind of like. Those guys kind of, I think, like learned how to like kill a room and do all that stuff long before they ever started just going into like these stories. Yeah. So I think it is kind of important to like learn how to kill first. That's kind of the, you know what I mean?
I think learn how to write a joke, then learn how to tell a story.
Right.
Like, I think there is a momentum that needs to be happening there, because if you just jump into a story. And, but the thing is like, but there's a, you know, Bill Burr was talking about it with like, there's such a forgiving, you know, audience now for people like Creek in the Cave type atmospheres where people don't have to get the laugh.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it's like I'm still in this mold where it's just like I have to get laughs.
Yeah.
Like I have these comedy ears that sometimes I'll do well and everybody'll say you did amazing and I just don't hear enough laughter cuz I just have this thing cuz
I want to hear
I came up following Beast. So it's like, you know, they're just like Will Sylvents, guys like that would just destroy the room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you know. Yeah, that's a big. There's definitely something to that between the difference between the club scene and these bar scenes. I mean, and that's I have a lot of respect for a lot of comics in both scenes. I'm not shitting on one or the other, but yeah, it's like you go and I do some of these rooms where you know you'll do rooms like at least my experience. I don't do it that much, but like with Cabin, they're just so with you. Like they're so with you already. It's just like a kind of all right, you guys are just into this, and it's much more a kind of thing where they, you know, it's kind of like. They like someone just doing something kind of like smart for the sake of smart. Like, here, let me show you that I kind of know this book or this thing or isn't this ironic? But I don't know, like, like I came up kind of in the club scene where you watch dude like Greer Barnes just fucking level a room where you're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what comedy is supposed to be.
Yeah.
To me, I always have that feeling. Like, comedy is supposed to be this, like, punching you in the face with funny.
Yes.
This isn't a fucking poetry reading session. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is like. Bunch and like to me also it's like it like I think you know like just that example I think Greer Barnes is really really smart shit it may not be like it, for the sake of being like ironic but it's like really clever the way he like puts it together so it's not you know
you
I
take
don't know.
Somebody
it's smart material but with that really same smart. Performance quality and that performance energy he's doing characters and other things are you saying younger crowds or the crowds now don't appreciate that type of shit
well I'm just my point is just that this it's not just smart versus not smart is my thing because like I think Chappelle was probably like the smartest comic I shouldn't say was Chappelle's still a comic. Chappelle is one of the smartest comics I've ever seen but he is doing stuff where it's like stomp your feet kill you know like that's
well like Steve Martin I mean he was putting arrows on his head and dancing to King Tut and doing goofy shit but that guy's a genius you know he's an author and writer that's all kinds of amazing stuff and so it's like I think
and he's still funny
he is well I don't know I stand he hasn't done stand-up
not
stand-up
wise but just his acting and skits you see him do he's
still funny
he's got a funny Twitter man
oh does he But I don't know, man. I just think it's, you know, I don't think, like, trying to make a crowd laugh with a punchline is, like, that's not, you know, people, like, judge that. Like, this generation of comedy coming up, like, they think that that's a sellout because you're a club comic or something.
Yeah, I feel like they don't go on the road either, though. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like
they do, and they tank usually.
Yes, exactly. Because on the road, you got to kill or else you're not going to get hired back. You're going to miss out on that money. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like in that road mentality of, like, I have to kill.
People also don't realize, I think, how there's, like, these really small, dominant groups. And like, I'd say hipsters are one of those. Mm-hmm. Like, there's hipsters are like a thing. We all know what they are. They control a little bit of TV and they're in these cities. But if you think about the country, hipsters are this tiny, tiny, tiny porch. There's nowhere else.
Exactly.
They're like here in Williamsburg and a little place in LA.
Yeah, it's like, are you
nowhere else with hipsters?
Actually, there are. But if you do go to certain cities, there are little.
You're right. Austin,
Portland, Austin.
Even Miami got people that.
Sure, sure. So you're right. There are more now. But in general, it's still a small percentage of people.
It's still New York, California, one big Walmart in between.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still
and
that.
Those people, and so it's you know, a lot of these alt guys like kind of tailor make their act toward this hipster crowd, which is, you know, it is a limited audience.
Well, who I've seen really evolve as far as just like a broad base of audience is Ron White has figured out a way to kind of bring everybody in. Most people will be like, yeah, I like Ron White. Like, even people that aren't
he's
Southern.
He's an amazing storyteller.
Yeah, and he... Well,
yeah,
know,
he's just good.
Yeah, and he's able to pull that off.
Like, he was the guy that even if, you know, for people who wanted to hate on that group, he is the guy who they go like,
okay,
but
Ron White
like
is
a real
the truth.
Comic.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't say that's not
I still
like,
have a Ron White story when he was tanking in Miami.
Oh,
Miami
really?
Improv. And, you know, I knew he was a beast, but the Miami... At the time was, they want it hard, it's a party city, come at me, but Ron White comes up there and tells his potato salad joke, and he's taking his time, and they were eating him up. And as the host, I had to go up there and be like, hey, you know, regulate, get people, hey, you respect, blah, 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 blah. And now I don't know if he still does, but I remember after that, he would see me and be like, hey, you're the guy that saw me bomb, you know? But I was like, Ron White's a beast. I couldn't, you know, Miami's was just a different place at the time, man. They didn't any of that negative material or anything about the news. Like, man, what the fuck are you talking about? Tell us.
It's just like anything else, you know. It's like when salsa comes on, those are amazing musicians, but I can't listen to it. You know what I mean? I mean, that's amazing percussion and horns. I can't listen to that shit for 2 seconds. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just becomes about that. It becomes about what you gravitate towards and what your taste, really.
Yeah, it's cool. Comedy fans are, like, really lucky right now because they can get whatever they want, you know? They don't just have to listen to, like, one of, like, five funny dudes. It's like everyone is out there now. There's so many comics. You got alt comics that they like.
There's so much
Southern
content.
Comics.
It's ridiculous how much
nuts,
content
man.
There is.
So many Latino comics. World.
Like, well, I go to Rooftop Comedy and, you know, they have comics material. And, you know, they have it in alphabetical order. And I'm going through K's looking for my name. There's like fucking 3 pages of K comedians. You know?
It's insane.
You know what I mean?
4 Dustins. Yeah.
4 Dustins. Both from Bedford, Texas. As
two,
well.
2 from Bedford.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Like, I go, when you go to, say, the Knitting Factory, I notice, like, comics that are more thoughtful, that seems like they're just thinking through their process, gets a better response than a comic that comes up and is clean, polished with jokes like jokey, joke, 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 joke.
Yeah.
Dude, that is so interesting. When I first moved up to New York and did those, like, did some small rooms and stuff, I remember thinking, like, whoa, whenever there's just comics there, I can't, like, I want to kill, you know? But whenever you do your set, it's like, what's this guy fucking doing? Who does he think? Like, that's what I felt. Like, oh, man, I'm just doing my set. I feel like I need to be doing something more artsy now.
I've been doing stand-up comedy since the 1920s, and I tell you, I still get weird when there's, you know, I still feel like when there's certain comics in the room, you know.
I hate it, dude.
I feel like, a lot of times I'll find myself, especially if, like, the audience, I lose the audience for a second, then I'll just find myself playing to the comics. Like, if I lose the audience for a second, I'm going right to the back of the room.
Yes, because you got to see those comics.
Yeah, because I can think of something, whether it's an inside joke or an industry joke or something, I could throw that out there and get a laugh. And then sometimes I'll lose the real crowd all together, but I'll get a couple of comics to laugh. And sometimes that seems like a victory because we're just so, like, you know, brand of brothers. We feel like, you know, you get me, you know. You know what I mean. I don't know. I think comedy's, it's still awesome, though. That's the thing. It's still, out of all the things you could do with your life and dedicate and obsess with, this, you know, we still can't not get enough of it. Like, we still have to get on stage. So
I get scared. I think about what my life would be without comedy, and it just terrifies me, man. I'd probably be like selling insurance or something.
Yeah.
I'd so this is what you've done since college or since?
Since high school, I've been doing stand-up.
Since high school.
Yeah.
So that's an advantage people coming up now. They're exposed to it. When I had a friend that was doing comedy, and it seemed like it wasn't even an option for a career, you know?
Right.
Yeah. In like the late 80s, and he would go to New York, and you know, he would be like, you should get on stage, you're funny. I'm like, nah, man, I ain't doing that shit.
Yeah, I just...
Where would I even go? I didn't even know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I didn't even focus on a career. I was just like, because I was like, I at least got like 4 years to chill out. I don't have to like do too much, you know, live really cheap. And then I just did comedy. After that, I started making money on the road and stuff. And
well, you did it right. Were you like, if, you know, I remember, I've told this story a few times. So I remember being at the New York Comedy Club when I was a young comic, and all these comics were surrounding Attell. And they were like, Attell, can you give us advice, man, advice? And he goes, acting school. And nobody expected him to say that, you know, because he's not known for being. And I think because he was seeing his friends like Ray Romano and all these big guys. And they were getting, you know, the fucking gold deals. They were getting the, you know, end of the rainbow because of, you know, sitcoms and acting and certain things. And I think that's what launches you to another level of fan base, you know, that I think it's, you know, it's a rough road, you know, Brian Regan, you know, it's like, you know, guys like that, like, you know, it's a rough road when all you do is just comedy, stand-up comedy every night.
Well, it's
know?
Not rough for Brian Regan because he's selling out theaters, but
well,
it's a rough
I've drank
road
with
for
him.
Dude
I've drank with him. I guarantee you he would be a lot happier just doing two shows a month and going to a studio at CBS.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm just saying.
Sure.
I bet. You know.
But it's. I mean, what's rough is like trying to be Brian Regan because that's like there's
that's
not
true.
That many guys who can get that. And it's just look, there's a thing where you start to real this comedy thing. It's like. Is like this game of musical chairs where there's way more people than chairs. Mm-hmm. Like there's all these people now. There's so many people. Like you were talking about so many people who do comedy now. It's ridiculous. I mean, you can't even measure how many there are in this city. Mm-hmm. It's every borough is flooded with comics. Every town
and other cities.
Every city and everywhere in this country, there's comics. This city's so many. It's like every household's probably got two comics in it.
Yeah.
It's a. But so you go like there's only going. You know, everyone kind of has this. Idea in their mind that they're going to make it and they're going to, you know what I mean, like be a comedian and there's only going to be X amount of spots. It can't, this industry can't support this many people. So it's just interesting to me to see like how it's all going to play out.
Well, you have to treat comedy like a job, you know, you have to treat it like
absolutely.
It's a business, you know, like you're the business and you have to like get people to come to your business. And I think that's what you can make a living in comedy in so many different aspects, writing, producing, running shit, clubs, whatever. Like you just have to figure out how to do that. Cause I do like 12 things in comedy but it's all related to stand up, but it's like, you know, I'm going to make a little money here, a little money doing this, a little money doing that. And I think that eventually, unless you blow up, you have to kind of be creative
and how you make
a living. Yeah.
Even when you blow up, you're still a freelancer.
And that's when the real work starts
in this game.
That's,
yeah.
You know? That's that's something I've really realized recently is like that this thing isn't, it's almost like the dream of being a stand-up is you're like, oh, I don't even have to work during the day and then I just show up and do my thing. But it's like, that's not actually the reality.
Yeah.
It's like the successful guys are the hardest working guys.
Because if you get a gig, that's when the real work starts.
But at the end of the day, I feel like a carpenter or something.
Said that Lewis, my buddy Lewis Gomez, you guys all know him, said the other day, so that was such a like poignant point. Weird way to put it, but someone was saying like made the comment about like something about Michael Che, you know, as a writer for Saturday Night Live now, and he was like, man, I wish I had what he had. I forget who even said this thing, but he was like yeah, Michael Che is working his ass off right now.
It's like
that dude's writing for SNL, you know how hard a job that is. Like if you like they work, it's notorious
a
for
lot
just being
of
like these insane hours. It's like you don't even think about that aspect. It's easy when you don't have it to just go, oh, I'd like to get this or get that. But it's like you gotta work
in the comic lifestyle anyway. Once you get a gig, that's when you have to be there and you have to you know, it's like a job.
You gotta wake up and
I went
shit
to my friend's
morning.
Show the other day to help him do punch up. And after like a couple hours, I'm like, all right, when is this shit gonna
happen?
Anything you book, any TV show, anything.
Yeah,
you're like,
man. On us
when we rap.
Your TV is so much work too.
So how was the sitcom? He was sitcom.
Yeah. On Us and Them, it was like, it was crazy ass work. It was like every, dude, I worked at like 4 out of 5 days usually, and they were insane days. Just to do a few scenes, you know, like you don't think it would take that long, but work, work, work. And then by the end of the day, I remember in my head too, thinking, man, when I get a sitcom, it's going to be the shit. I'm going to go out and party afterwards. I was tired as shit. It was like I immediately went to bed or I had to stay up and just learn the lines for tomorrow because you get such a small amount. Dude, it was insane how much they worked you. It's like you would get a brand new script like, say, on Monday for next week's episode. You're already shooting this week's episode, but then like, you got to do a table read each Tuesday. And the table read isn't just to, like, okay, guys, we're going to hang out and, like, figure out shit. No, it's, like, a table read in front of, like, Fox executives and Sony executives and the casting dude. And you're looking, like, and you're like,
on your A game.
Yes, and you're like, I just got this shit today. Yeah. How can you guys be doing this?
Hey, it's the big leagues, motherfucker. It's the NFL.
You look around, it's like, okay, I guess you have to fucking do this now. Yeah. But I don't got to worry about that.
Did you have formal acting training, or did you just, you auditioned, you fit the part?
I did a ton of acting in high school and always liked that. But I did go to an acting coach just to make sure. I really want someone just to say, like, okay, you don't look like a dumbass right now. That's what I need. Like, let me do my shit and tell me.
Is that show still on? No.
No, it's coming out. It's so funny. It got canceled before it came out. It's coming out mid-season.
How many episodes did you take?
Seven. It's seven.
So they're going to air those seven.
Yeah, they're going to air this.
But that's so weird. It's not going to. It's canceled, but they're still going to put it out.
Well, yeah. Hey, man, they tested.
That's still great that it's coming out, though. It's still like a credit. So you get your name out there. Yeah, that's great. Man.
It could be like one of, like, Arrested Development, where it gets on Netflix or something.
Yeah, maybe someone else
gets popular.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so crazy because you, like, I never paid attention to how, like, the inside of the business worked and everything. And now you just hear all these things. Executive, this guy doesn't like that guy. You saw this. You hear a bunch of bullshit behind the scenes. It's like, how do you fucking make it?
That's a weird.
You're making it, man. You're doing great.
Yeah, you're awesome, man.
It's cool. But it's like, it's so funny because it's just like this is just life, just comedy. This is what it's going to be forever. I remember, like, Tom Rhodes. I remember he told me this one time. And now it, like, goes into this exact situation. He had a TV show that he had just gotten. He did, like, seven episodes or something and canceled.
Yeah.
And then you always think, like, okay, so I guess, am I going to be like Tom Rhodes? That's an awesome life. But am I going to get other things? Or is this it for me? Or is this... you got a bunch of anxiety and shit.
What's great watching, you know, seeing you and stuff, and, you know, We Bought a Zoo, I saw that, and it was great seeing you in that. How was that, like, Matt Damon and all that stuff?
That was awesome. That was, like, the most fun. That was, like, one of the first things I got, too. And just Cameron Crowe was, like, the shit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's a great director, man. That's amazing.
It was a blast, dude. It was just, this thing was just a bummer just because it was, like, a sitcom, and I had a big part on it.
A regular thing.
Yeah, it was, like, a nice little... I didn't have to freak out about money for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Well, that's
what network was that?
Fox.
Oh, nice.
Not familiar with.
Do they make you sign? They make you sign that thing before you sign your contract of how much you'll get per episode before you even shoot the pilot or something.
Yeah.
You ain't got to tell me how much you made, but how much was it? More than 10 an episode. It was more than 20 an episode.
Dude, it was like. It was the most. It was more than 20. It was fucking. It hurts.
Jesus,
dude, you know how
more
shitty
than 40
it is.
An episode,
bro. It is
more than 40.
It was
in between 20 and 40.
Yeah, and it was like.
Jesus
dude, I remember going to the comic strip too, and then you look at your $25 like money you're making, and you're like, oh my god, this is fucking insane. But it's cool. It's fun, you know. But it's just like. I had that taste for a little bit, that little taste of what it was like.
But isn't that what it is, though? It's like, you know, you go from one thing and then something else open up because you have this amazing, you know, resume and reel.
That's the plan. They still have us under contract, but like, so hopefully they won't let us keep us out of pilot season. That would kind of suck.
How was 21 and Over? How was making that movie?
That was a blast, yeah.
Did you guys really get fucked up on set and stuff?
No, afterwards we did.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not at that level yet where I can drink or get high on set yet.
The Downey Jr. stuff.
Yeah, you hear those stories and you're like, man.
His trailer smells like weed coming out of the trailer.
Dude, like, I hear those stories. How the hell is he doing really? That?
Well, I don't even understand. Like in the 80s, you know, Jim Carrey and Robin Williams coked up. Like I've tried to do comedy one time coked up, and it was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And I don't imagine how somebody would do that on a regular basis and be successful at it. Like, you know, they blew up these huge, like, just to be that jacked up all the time. I don't understand how you're able to function in your art by being that jacked up. I have no idea. Especially cocaine. For me personally.
When they say cut or action and you're right on, I can't get that.
Like Richard Pryor, man, he was always messed up. And he was a genius all the time. So I don't even know how he was able to pull that off, you know.
Me either. I'm thinking my weed smoker's ruining me.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah.
I gotta kick this weed or else I'll never.
Dude, it's so weird. You think things like that. Like, all right, maybe I shouldn't smoke weed ever again. But then you hear other stories like, this guy smokes weed. He's drunk weed on set.
Well, that's the thing. Every time I would relapse, it'd be after a Doug Stanhope show. I'd be like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Perfect excuse.
I just go right back to the bar. I try to get sober for a year. I'd see Doug Stanhope. I'd go right back to drinking. So he's just in tune with himself, man. The alcohol brings it out. Well, he had a funny joke about that. He said something like, "It's like he smokes cigarettes to focus and weed to come up with the idea of the joke, and then alcohol is the courage to tell the joke." Like it's like this whole process.
Makes sense,
yeah. It's like, God, I gotta start smoking again. That's a good point.
Yay. All right, we're gonna go do a musical break. We'll come back here on Hick Hop Radio.
Hick Hop Radio.
Yeehaw, son.
Come back to Hick Hop Radio. Yeehaw. We're having some good conversation about comedy and the comedy game and the styles and everything. Very interesting. And also, when we went to break, we were talking about cruise ships. Performing on cruise ships, and we all came to the consensus that it sucks. But and if you got any questions or comments, please hit us up at hickhopradio@gmail.com. And we back. Adam Lucidi.
Yes, sir.
Adam Lucidi is our engineer and is a very funny comedian. You got a segment? What's up?
Just picking up some news for you guys to kind of riff on. There was a charity event this past weekend for healthcare for the homeless. They ended up raising $17,000 at this event, and surprisingly, it was a funeral for Walter White from Breaking Bad in New Mexico. So they had an actual funeral, have a headstone in this cemetery, an actual cemetery. And now it's causing like a whole bunch of controversy because it's like an actual headstone at like this place of mourning and stuff like that. And so, yeah.
But they raised money. Wait, they raised
$17,000 for the charity.
Damn, they got a statue of Rocky.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, white people crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you guys think that there's like any, like what other show could possibly get like this kind of status? A fake funeral, like they even had an obituary in the paper with his picture in the paper and everything.
I think Walking Dead fans are pretty serious like that. If they have dead walks and all that, they'll, you know.
Well, that's just how crazy we are that, like, they get just, I mean, I that show was so good, though. I mean, it made me think he was a real guy. Like, I really thought he died. Like, that's how good that show is.
You felt it like, damn, I miss him.
I'm affected that show's off the air. It was such a good show that I look forward to seeing it all every week. That it makes an impact. I mean, that, back in the day, people used to get weird about stuff called, I don't know, books, you know? Like, people used to get, you know, the Bible was a big deal for a while.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, it's just what is consuming us and hypnotizing us.
It seems, I don't know. I don't understand why everyone always has to waste so much fucking energy and resources to just give money to a good cause. Like, why do you have to build this ridiculous fake grave? Just give money to homeless people's health care.
Yeah.
You don't need to run a race or fucking do any of this dumb shit. Just give your money. You need to sponsor anyone. Just donate.
Yeah.
All of it makes no sense.
It doesn't work. I think we have to be tricked into...
Yeah, I got
to
see a little shit.
Yeah.
You know?
We're just, you know,
before I give
that's
you my
our
money
mentality.
For charity, let's see what you can do
for
me.
Dance, homeless
also, by
man,
the way,
dance. Do a trick.
Also,
sing a song.
I find something a little bit weird about trying to get homeless people health care. I mean, it's like, let's start with homes. I'm not lying. I'm just saying, lots of people have homes and don't have health care. Like, let's start at the bottom and try to, you know,
your health,
food first, then homes. Yeah. I'll worry about him fucking, you know, checking him for lumps later.
Yeah, your health will dramatically, you know, improve if you have a house.
Turns out one of the best things for your health is
sleeping behind a dumpster is probably not that healthy. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. But and then the tombstone thing, there's always somebody that's sensitive about something sacred, you know, in this country. Everybody's always flipping out on something that, I mean, I don't know. I guess that is a little weird. Like, just they could have probably just put it in the desert somewhere. I don't think they need to put a tombstone. Like, put it in that place where they filmed that last scene where Hank got shot and all that stuff. Like, just put a tombstone there somewhere. Like, you don't need to put it next to somebody's grandmother.
But why would he be buried there?
Publicity. You
know, why would Walter be buried at the money spot?
Well, I just started it.
That's what the fan in me is thinking. Like, well, no, that wouldn't make sense.
Put him in a barrel next to the money, man.
Oh, that'd be crazy. Yeah, right?
That's where you put him. I don't know.
Just open a theme park. Make it the next Graceland. That's what they should do. Like Breaking Bad and Albuquerque.
Yeah. What was great about that show is how, you know, towards the end of it, I think for myself, I was just like, you know, I mean, doing something illegal didn't affect me as much as it might have before. Like, I was like, you know, I'm okay with that.
Right?
Like,
I mean,
people want meth, and he's good at it, you know? It's like, he's a quality product. People are going to do meth anyway. Yeah. And I'm always amazed the genius of people getting away with illegal activities. Mm-hmm. You know, like, whenever there's, like, a bank robber that's not caught, I'm always like, that's fucking awesome.
Oh, I'm fascinated by that
like,
shit.
Like, just think you could get away with it, and then, dude, like, people that get away with all this crime and stuff, and they just, you know, live
guys
large.
Rick Ross and people like that, who's, like, just, like, some dude in the hood and then makes himself, like, this multi-millionaire off a crack operation, is dealing with, like, Nicaraguans and CIA agents.
Just a regular
dude. It's insane.
Dude.
He just had a fucking idea for
it. American gang. Stuff,
I can't wrap my head around the amount of money they make. You know what I mean? Like, Griselda Blanco was worth $1 billion almost.
Off the books, man.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah. Like, they don't even know where to put the money.
Yeah, I mean, you watch Scarface, you watch certain movies, and you're just amazed how that happened. I mean, that happens all the time. There's guys that actually do that and create that empire. And to be able to, first of all, you're not stupid if you can do that. Like, it takes a genius to be able to get away with it.
Oh, yeah, the drug dealers were the smartest dudes in my neighborhood. Like, the guys that I knew that were selling drugs were always, before the drug game, they were always someone that we looked to and be like, that guy knows something. Like, you know, I had a friend who became a biggest drug dealer in my town. But I remember growing up, he knew how to build clubhouses. He put chimney.
Yeah. No,
he put a chimney in the clubhouse with a fireplace in the clubhouse.
No.
He had chemistry sets. He knew how to DJ. He was just talented fucking dude. You know,
it's just that what happens is it's fucked up because it's the policy that's really fucked up. Is it's just you create this market where there's this huge, huge profit in this product that there's this huge, huge desire for, and no one in the legal world is meeting this desire, so it's just this huge opening. So it sucks a lot of the like smart, talented kids in the inner city into it. As it's really unfortunate thing, then they end up going to like one of these prisons, and that turns them into like a violent, you know, like.
But the weirdest thing is, you say the inner city, but I think white people do more drugs than anyone. But
yeah, but
like,
the system doesn't put them in fucking prisons for it as much, and that doesn't turn them into, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's the
thing is that, no, you're right, they do. But those are the most like racist, fucked up numbers like in America today. Mm-hmm. Is the amount of drug use is pretty even from white to black, but the amount of arrests for drug use is like through the roof. Oh, well, so much more black people than the whites. Prison's like 70% black.
It's the
black
same.
People are like 13% of the population.
I mean, I think, you know.
I might be wrong about
this. It's modern day slavery, really, because they have them working for companies. It's the same thing with Jim Crow laws.
Well, dude, I think about this all the time, man. And it's like a thing where you go, we like to like look back in history like, oh, in Jim Crow time or in slavery time or things
today.
Like that. But you actually, if you didn't know anything and you were just put here for the first time ever, I think what you would point out is like, wait, we haven't solved all these problems. In New York City, the black neighborhoods are the shittiest, toughest neighborhoods. I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah. These are the neighborhoods where they're violent. It's the black neighborhoods still. There's clearly something going on here. We haven't, like, solved these problems.
We've masked it better.
I'm not saying there are some black people who live in good neighborhoods, but how many good black neighborhoods are there in New York? Just take New York. And then that's true in lots of different cities. The war on drugs, the incarceration rates, the public school system, man, it's all real. Well, this got serious real quick.
No, it's fine.
But
I mean, I think every town should have a red light district, a place where you can do drugs, get a prostitute.
New York definitely.
I really do. Like,
I think you're right.
There should be a need, because there's like, I'll read something in the paper. Some guy raped somebody or somebody did this, and it's like, I feel like that desire is going to be there with people. Some people are mentally unstable and stuff, but I think a red light district creates a place where people can just go, be bad, and get it out, and they don't take it out
on the
public.
New York definitely needs one. I suggest like Stanton and Rivington, that whole area somewhere.
It's already
there.
Pretty close.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might as well just make it official.
You know, just a few smoke shops.
Yeah, but we're you know, this country's in denial that people have those desires and, you know, want to do those things. But that's never going to go away. You know?
I do think marijuana will be legal within the 5 years because almost, you know, a lot of states are decriminalizing.
Seems like that's the move.
Even
it's going
Jersey,
that,
yeah, direction. Marijuana. And, you know, you look at prohibition, too, with alcohol. And then once they lifted prohibition, people went and started drinking, and the gangsters lost their power.
And it was so, as soon as they started prohibition, they created all this crime, this organized crime, and as soon as they repealed prohibition, it went away. And that's, if you legalize drugs, the same shit would happen with all like this Portugal. Gang violence that we have. By the way, all those numbers, whenever they talk about like gun control and shit like that, all those numbers of how many people are murdered in America every year, and the war on drugs, and that number will get like ridiculously smaller. Gang violence over drug shit is like a huge, huge part of that.
I mean, unfortunately, I feel you have to regulate, you know. That's why I think like an area or a place, you know.
Yeah, you don't want it in schools and shit like that.
Yeah, sure. People are fucking.
But street dudes that I know have been like, nah, they don't want marijuana to be legalized or whatever, because then the government will make the money and the regular, you know.
Oh, there's definitely some people. There's definitely some people.
The mom
like
and
that.
Pop shops.
The mom and pop drugs.
The mom and pop
drug spots.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, if you own a private prison, you definitely don't want weed to be legalized. I'll tell you that much. You're getting all your prisoners off, you know what I mean, like that shit, and you make money off them. So if you own one of those places, there's definitely some people who will lose money off of it, you know?
Yeah. All right, what else? You got another one, Adam?
Oh, other than the Walter White thing, the thing that went down, apparently midnight last night, there were like 7 same-sex couples that got married because now in New Jersey, you can do it now. I guess they passed it.
Oh, word?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Christie's not going to, you know, appeal it or whatever. He just decided to back off. So what do you guys think about that in Jersey now?
He doesn't have the numbers on that, so, you know.
That's a political move for him.
Yeah.
He saw what that did for Obama. But, yeah, who gives a shit?
I think
care.
Obama's pregnancy. His presidency did more for gays than black folk.
His pregnancy did a lot for him.
Yeah.
His pregnancy really was a game changer for these guys.
Is that ever gonna just?
Actually, I think you're right about that, right? Like there's hard to say. There's pretty like tangible things he did for gay people, like ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and coming out running. It's pro gay marriage. I couldn't think of anything so tangible that he did for like black people. You know what I mean? He didn't come out on some issue like, oh, this is how I feel.
Well, that was another political move, you know. On his
It's all just politics.
Probably more gay people than black people in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be weird to see that number, but I'd like to see that stat on USA Today.
Yeah, right. How many gays incarcerated?
Well, they don't start that way. They don't go in that way. But
maybe
they
not voluntarily.
Out.
At least one in every movie. You know, that tough talking sister.
Oh yeah, that was funny. All right. Hey, I don't care. Gay marriages. I've been to a gay wedding and saw 2 lesbians get married, and you can't tell me those two didn't deserve to have the same rights as everybody else. They loved each other.
It was weird that they scissored in the middle of the service.
Yeah.
But
it was hot, though. It was hot.
But, you know, that's how they do it.
Yeah, I went to a gay wedding. It was 2 hot Filipino chicks that got married. Yeah. It was cute, man. It was a wedding, you know. They were love. They both wore, I forgot what they wore. They both wore, like, white tuxes. It was cute.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was really nice. They both were beautiful. And I was like, oh, I want to go. I want to go on a honeymoon with you, motherfucker.
We just have to take religion out of stuff that, you know, that affects people's lives.
Well, you can be like as religious as you want to. You just can't push it on anyone else.
You can find those rules.
You want to go to your church, and if your church says we're not going to marry gay people or whatever, and you can say I don't believe in that. I don't believe that's marriage. That's fine. But you can't tell 2 people they can't call their relationship what they want to call. You know what I mean? Just like they can't make you get gay married. You can't make them not get gay married. I don't know. It's all right.
I don't know. I just feel it's just the same shit over and over. It's always.
You mean life or history, the cycle of man?
I'm tired of talking about gay marriage, you know. But I support it, but I'm so sick of it.
Yeah, it's like, how is it still like not happening now? Like,
yeah, I mean, some states, Texas and Utah and Idaho, those places will never budge.
Yeah, but if I were a gay dude in Texas, I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna go over here where I can get married and shit. Yeah. You know?
Or go to Oaklawn.
Oaklawn. Yeah, how can that? I've seen Oaklawn, man. That's like the gayest place I've ever seen in my life.
I remember being a kid when I was in high school. It was like that was the only place you could see a real film like, you know, good bookstore, like in Texas. Yeah. Like, that's where you went for, like, any sort of culture was, like,
you're so
the
right
gay,
about
the gay neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. A ton of the open mics were over there.
Oh, really?
Back in the day, just because, yeah, they were in the art and shit.
Yeah, it was, like, the one place where you get any sort of culture that wasn't George Strait or something, yeah, you know, coming out of Texas. I don't know. Gay neighborhoods are always the best place.
Come on, George.
Oh, yeah. Gay,
shit.
I love gay neighborhoods, especially in Florida.
Amarillo by morning. Come on.
A lot of gay dudes have been Amarillo moving to different neighborhoods, in especially in Florida, like neighborhoods that were like crack neighborhoods years before, and gay dudes went in and redid the whole thing.
What Fort Lauderdale?
Even Fort Lauderdale. I'm from Jersey, but I lived in Fort Lauderdale for years.
Oh, yeah.
Lived in Miami. Even Miami Beach. All that whole movement was... Like, Miami used to be a lot of gay clubs or clubs where they had, like, transvestites at the door and everything. And they kind of helped build that whole South Beach.
That was, like, a real, like a lot of the areas in New York really came up, right? Like, Fort Lauderdale was shitty when I was a kid. Northern Miami was real shitty. And that really at all really came up.
I remember.
Yeah, you got to get gays and Jews into a neighborhood to bring it up.
I remember being young and then just realizing how many people that I worshipped that were gay. You know, like when you're a little kid, you don't realize Queen or Elton John. Like, you, the older you get, you realize like
Liberace.
Yeah. I think I timed it. Yeah, you just never saw it coming.
There's two dudes banging. I didn't know that was gay.
Guys, totally gay. Turns out.
Totally gay.
I hung out with a famous singer the other day. Male singer who has a huge female fan following, but I think he was a little sweet. I'm like, I ain't gonna tell you his name. I'll tell you off air, but I was like,
sweet on you a little bit.
He wasn't sweet on me.
Oh, good.
But he was just sweet in general. Yeah. And the dude I was with, he was sweet with. You know what I mean? Like, he was a little sweet.
I know.
But I don't have nothing against, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, it just freaks you out. You know what I mean? It's like. Yeah.
I know comics that you guys probably think are straight who totally aren't. Like, there's tons of people. You have no idea.
But it's like you go and you see Johnny Cash and he's like swishing a little bit. This pinches your cheek. Oh, you're so handsome, Dustin. You'd be like,
watch your
Johnny.
Mouth. Watch your mouth. Yeah. Talk about Johnny like that.
Someone who has a
man in black, don't take it in the back. Drop the mic. What do you listen to over there?
Some turn up music, my nigga. I don't know. Just
all right, we got anything else besides gay marriage and Walter White?
Oh, man. I got lost after Walter White. After that, I was like, fuck, what's going on?
Let's go back to
right
comedy.
Now?
So,
it was a slow news week. Is there anything happening? What's popping out there in the world right now?
Government shutdown. That's over,
it's
I guess.
It's back open.
It's back open.
Go to Yellowstone Park and Smithsonian and... I don't know. I got more affected when they closed it on Blockbuster Video than shut down the government.
That was awesome. They were giving DVDs away for like $1.99. I love when they shut down Blockbuster.
Yeah. I miss video stores, though.
I would get furniture from that place, man, from Blockbuster. Whenever they were closing down, you could go in there. Right?
Just get a rack.
A rack, a shelf. Like, I'm going to grab this, man. Sweet. Let's sell everything, man.
I miss bookstores.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble is still thriving.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Is it?
I ain't know.
Do you guys use Redbox?
I've used it before, but once I got my Netflix, I mess with Netflix.
Is that the thing in the Dwayne Reed or whatever?
Yeah, where you go.
Yeah, I've never used that once.
I see them. I see people using it.
Yeah.
I've used it a few times.
Yeah, there's never one near my house. Like, if I were to do that, it'd take me 2 weeks to get it back in that thing.
Yeah, between, like, my Netflix and Hulu and then just, like, illegally watching shit on the internet, I'm pretty good.
What do you, one channel? What's your thing? One channel actually was shut down, but they have another one that's...
Spotify.
Oh, one channel. Now you do...
Spotify. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. What's it called? Jesus Christ, it's slipping my mind right now. But I use a lot of TV... Not TV links. I used to use that a decent amount. God damn it. It's driving me crazy.
Do you feel, though, like the further along you get in the entertainment industry, that affects you? You probably make money off things.
I'm nowhere near where I'm like, damn it, why don't you quit stealing my shit? I'd make some money if you guys weren't illegally downloading my...
I just downloaded all 7 episodes of your...
You might as well take 5 cents out of my pocket, bro. You know?
But the goal is to get to that point. And so I wonder, you know. It's like,
I did it. It's something I thought. You know what? I actually have illegally downloaded a couple of things I was in. I felt weird about it. Like, oh, man, if I get busted, that's going to be awkward. You know, they're like, Dustin, you downloaded Hop. Like, well, I didn't want to pay for it. I only had a small part, you know?
Well, I was in Iraq, and Bruce Campbell from, you know, Evil Dead movies and stuff, and we were, you know, he was doing meet and greets and stuff, and we were doing comedy, and he was. It was funny because over there in Iraq and stuff, it's like, you know, all the locals, it's all bootleg shit, like all bootleg. So it was so funny watching him sign, you know, autograph like bootleg versions of like Evil Dead and like Army of Darkness. Yeah. And he was talking about it. He's like, this is not right, man. This is no. he really should have bought this at a regular place. Like, it was so funny. You could tell he was like, he got a little nerve, a little effect, because I'm sure he makes money off that stuff.
It does make sense because it's like the grips and the dudes, like the tech dudes who like are just, you know, just regular dudes that are kind of getting cut out, you know?
Yeah, it was just funny watching him sign these, like, you know, because it's always like a crappy, like, black and white photo, like, that they put the CD in, the DVD in, you know, it's like a crappy looking version. Yeah, photocopy. Like, he's signing these things. But anyway, I don't know.
I walked out of a movie I was in one time just because I went in, I just wanted to see me. And then to my part, it was Hop. I walked in, like, it was like 20 minutes in, I saw me, I was like, okay, let's go get our money back, guys.
What did you have it with the rabbit, or?
Yeah, it was with Chelsea Handler and James Marsden.
Okay.
That was great, man. I remember thinking, like, fucking Cyclops, dude. This is the shit. That was the best my career has been, just seeing Cyclops.
So do you have to act to, like, a puppet thing, like a green screen thing?
No, the bunny was doing some other shit. It was like...
Oh, you were in another scene?
Yeah. No, okay. The bunny was, like, under us taking some file or something. I can't remember. The bunny was there, though.
Yeah.
It was a big round ball, though. That's all I remember. Behind the scenes.
That's cool, though. That's some good shit, man. More's gonna come, man. Don't get, you know.
What about for me, Dustin?
Keep it up, little kid. All right. No, man. You're done, dude.
Coming for me? You tapped out.
These two kids got a future. Oh, we're tapped out, man. Hip Hop Radio.
Yeah, we gotta go into writing. Gotta go in the background.
That's why I'm always good to young comics. Like, I need a writing job.
Yeah.
Take care of me, man. I'll give you 14 spots. Just give me a writing job.
Maybe I'll get the John Witherspoon spot. You know? I'll be the John Witherspoon for this new generation.
Who kills that spot?
Bang, bang, bang. Hey.
Hey,
I'm the funny old guy.
They're doing the new Friday. It's coming out.
Oh, where?
Yeah, I just saw that. Ice Cube's in a new Friday. That? New Friday coming. Friday 4, I think. I like the first one. The first one's one of my favorite movies.
That's great.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's so funny, man. It's just like...
The first one?
Yeah. First one's hilarious.
Amazing.
Debo and all that stuff. My mama gave it a shame.
Classic. And so simple. Everything came together in that film.
Well, that's it. Yeah. That's where the testament of, like, you never know what's going to happen when you're just doing your stand-up comedy. Because he was apparently... They saw Chris in a comedy club... And then he just did a, you know, like an 8-minute set or whatever. And then they totally, you know, afterwards, hey, man.
Yeah, that's all he had was like 15 minutes when he did Def Jam.
Yeah. And
but he was so good in that Bruce Willis movie and shit.
Which one was that?
What is it? The.
Fifth Element.
Fifth Element. Oh, he was good.
No, he's great. I'm just saying. But
I mean, he nailed Smokey in that movie.
He did.
He fucking nailed that part.
But it was
he doesn't even smoke. That's what's so funny.
But it was one of those things.
He got the character, whatever it was. He just got what was funny about it.
But it was one of those things where you never know who's in the crowd, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you're just doing your act and somebody important is sitting there who's making a movie looking for a black guy that can do this or do that, and then you happen to be that perfect guy for this role. Like, you just never know. I mean, unfortunately, that doesn't seem to happen as much as it should, especially in New York. It seems like that's more of an L.A. thing, but...
It was an L.A. thing, and I think it was an L.A. thing in the 90s, especially after the Def Comedy Jam hit.
It was, error was like a crazy time, man, when it was like this, what was happening with Def Comedy Jam very much like coincided what was happening with kind of like hip-hop music and like all the, it was a crazy time in this like brand new forms of entertainment that had never been out there before, and like it was so hot, and he hit that vibe right when it, you know, it's like... Sometimes the stars just align like that.
Yeah. But people, like, you would, I remember in the late 90s, early 80s, you would go and see a lot of industry still hanging and milling about with the talent, but now you don't see right. that
well,
as much anymore.
And one thing, like with Bernie Mac, it's like what's the true testament of having skills of, like, we were talking earlier about being able to crush a crowd, and, you know, that whole story with him where it's like everybody was eating their balls on that Def right. Jam taping. Right. He didn't give a fuck. And just went out there and just made it fun, treated it like, oh, I ain't afraid of you, motherfucker, and just went and just did his thing and killed the crowd, and then that was his momentum that just shot him to stardom.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those things where it's like, because that's going to be the worst situation ever. You know, everybody's tanking. You're about to be filmed on TV, and that's forever. Mm-hmm. And then yeah. you can either crumble or you can just say, let's do this, bitches, and out, you know, just outpunk them, and that's what he did, man.
I don't know. It still took him a while, even once he did Kings of Comedy. Hollywood still didn't give him, you know,
well,
everything at first. But then, you know,
well, you watch that. It's kind of like the Ron White thing. You're like, that's the standout.
Yes.
It's like right, that's right. the guy that stands out on that. Like once you saw the movie or whatever, then you see, like, that's the thing. He just stood out. He was the guy that just, because I felt like the other three were just doing, you know, I can't really get into the other three at all.
Yeah,
but right. Bernie's a beast. He was great.
Oh, he's so intense. Yeah.
Huh?
He was so intense in that. Yeah,
with his eyes. Yeah. This is fucking crazy.
Oh, shit. Y'all were talking about the gay marriage. Rich Kiamko, he's a comic. He got married in Jersey last night.
Good.
I'm seeing it. You know Rich Kiamko? He's a Filipino guy.
No.
He married
his... I don't roll with gay comics.
Oh.
You get married, but we ain't hanging out. I ain't booking you.
You ain't going to throw rice. Level to throw sweet and low. No, too much. Okay, I'm just
yay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Hip Hop Radio. We getting. I guess we'll wrap this up.
Nah, we got 5 more minutes.
We'll wrap it up. Well, then go. If you anchor this, if you're gonna keep going.
All right, we can wrap it up.
Dustin, you want to plug anything? Or Twitter, gigs,
anything? Dustin_Ibarra. I fucked up. I got an underscore in my Twitter. Someone said that was going to kill me. You know, I'm like, that's not going to. If that's what's going to, like, take
check
me
out down. The show. Check out, you got it.
Oh, yes, Us and Them comes out mid-season. And, you know, watch all 7 up. Maybe some miracle will happen. It'll get, like, amazing ratings, and they'll bring us back. Hey, that'd
man.
Be the shit.
It's exciting that you did it, man. I think it's great.
Yeah, it was fun.
Man.
You should do a Kickstarter.
You should.
I guess. Guys, you can see me. I'll be on episode 8 of Us and Them. God willing.
Who books
I'm so good on episode 8. You have no idea. I hope there's a cliffhanger on episode 7. But no, you follow me on Twitter at Comic Dave Smith.
Very cool. Kyle Grooms.
I'll be on the road. I'll be around New York City for the next couple weeks. And if you're out in Jersey or anywhere near Jersey, November 29th, I'm going to have a big New Jersey Garden State Homecomings comedy show. It's for the residents and visitors of New Jersey. We got some hot Jersey comedians coming. I'm hosting the thing. It's at the Forum Theater in Metuchen. So if anybody's in Jersey, come check it out. Black Friday, November 29th, Thanksgiving weekend, extravaganza.
Yay. Dustin Chafin, catch me at Dustin Chafin on Twitter. I'm doing a Yuck Yuck comedy tour in Alberta.
Hey, who books that?
Calgary, Toronto. If you're doing that coming up, you can go to the website yuckyuckscomedy or something like that .com. And catch me in the city, Stand New York, Comic Strip Live, and the lovely Greenwich Village Comedy Club. Thanks for listening to Hick Hop Radio. Their special guest, Dustin Ibarra, Dave Smith, Kyle Grooms. I'm Dustin Chafin. Listen in every Monday, 4 p.m., PNCradio.fm. Hick Hop Radio. Yeehaw, Sean.